This is Robert Stark. I am joined here with a rabbit. Rabbit, I just got back from Las Vegas. Rabbit, great talking to you again.
Yeah, it's great to be back on.
So we're going to kind of devote this show. We'll sort of go over our trip and some of our observations and what is unique about Las Vegas and its significance to our culture and society. I think the most important thing to point out is sort of Las Vegas epitomizes capitalism and commercialism at its fullest.
Yeah, definitely, almost without any restrictions. So it's interesting because you and I are both somewhat anti-capitalist, and yet we enjoy Las Vegas, so it makes us somewhat hypocritical. But at the same time, I feel like a lot of the things that that kind of ruin Las Vegas are exactly the same kind of capitalistic things.
So your kind of point is that capitalism can create great things, but it can also destroy things. So someone who's purely anti-capitalist would obviously say that capitalism just creates garbage. Are you making the point that capitalism can do great things? I think an analogy that I heard from a politician a while back is that capitalism is kind of like electricity. It's a great thing. Or you said capitalism is like fire. It's a great thing to invent, but if you let it get out of control, it can be very destructive.
Yeah, I think that that market forces can sometimes create some amazing things, but they also also devour themselves too. The same forces end up cannibalizing it. We can go into some examples if you want to, as far as Vegas, if there's anything that that strikes out in your mind.
Well, there's really nowhere else in the world like Vegas. I guess there's other places that have tried to kind of emulate it, but there really isn't. I mean, there's like gambling cities, there's Atlantic City, there's obviously Dubai, but I think it was a kind of unique that it was like kind of the original place like it. But it's not really a city in a traditional sense. Most people don't view it as a real city the way they would San Francisco or New York or any European city. A lot of people sort of view it as like a theme park for adults.
I would agree with that. And, going back to what you were saying, it kind of cropped up as this interesting place where, where it was all about, money and just like really just living it up, the capitalist lifestyle. But at the same time, now it's at like a point where it just keeps going and going to where it's not just that, you're trying to have a good time and make some money or something like that, but you've literally got, marketing and slogans beamed at you from every direction, every second, every moment, till there's no space at all left to be marketed to. You've got constant sound coming at you that's marketing to you, constant signs everywhere in the sky and every place and every building, every direction that you look, there's something being marketed to you.
And I think back in, say, the 50s or 60s or even 70s, Las Vegas stood out as unique because the rest of the country wasn't completely commercialized, but today our entire culture is sort of this nonstop at crass commercialization. So in a sense, Las Vegas has become less unique because it's sort of part of the culture. It's representative of sort of American popular culture taken to its fullest.
Yeah, in a sense, like the aesthetic there in many places now is not that different than your average big city mall. you know, it's the same kind of, a similar kind of ambiance.
But I mean, despite all that, it does have a sort of otherworldly feel to it. I mean, not just the aesthetics of it, but also the, I think the geographic location contributes to it as well.
Yeah, I think that the isolation of it is almost like you're, you know, visiting like an island or something for a while, because it's just, it's really this, you know, this small area in Las Vegas. You know, it's not even the entire city. So it's just this small area that people congregate to that is really kind of otherworldly for the time period that you're there.
And if you like fly in through plane, obviously you see, if you fly in through plane, you see mountains and deserts for quite some time. And then you fly over and you see large, massive amounts of like track housing with like patches of desert in between. So it's really, it's not a cohesive city. It's just this one small area along the Las Vegas Strip where everything is concentrated. But if you leave the Strip, there really isn't much. Well, there's the Strip and there's downtown, but most of Las Vegas is just either track housing, suburbs, or ghettos.
Yeah, in fact, if you leave the Strip, you don't even have to go too far. I mean, just more than a block or two, and you're in an absolute wasteland of either, you know, completely ghetto or just absolutely nothing there of interest.
Or
you know, just only going like two blocks.
Big massive parking lots.
Yeah, just you know, big massive parking lots and just really just slummy kind of motels, vacant buildings, and so forth. you know, the I mean, one thing we wanted to talk about, I think, is the resort fees. As far as how that relates, because we were kind of talking about how you know, unchecked capitalism kind of devours itself, and you know, in the old days, the you know, these hotels were kind of really meant to just live it up and give it, you know, good value and have a good time, and now we see that within the last couple of years they've introduced these mandatory resort fees. You know, which is like you pay an extra $30 a night for your hotel room. Of course, they don't show up in any of the advertisements. It's just a way that they, you know, they kind of insert them in at the very end.
Dishonest. I mean, there should be a law that says that you should charge the price that you're going to charge. I know conservatives like to complain about taxes, sales taxes, property taxes. But they just focus on the money that is that goes to the government, even though they might say that, oh, if you're a consumer, you have a choice. But even then, they don't really talk about the money that is charged to people in all these different fees, like these hotel fees. We're talking about resort fees. There's all kinds of fees. There's bank fees, a lot of ATMs charge fees. There's interest on credit card debt. There's just all kinds of these fees.
Yeah, and the thing about the resort fees is, you know, conservatives always say, well, you know, if you don't want to pay the fee, then you can always just choose another hotel. But what happens is all of these hotels, they all get together, and so you see it, and you're like, oh, well, screw this place. I'm not paying this $30 resort fee. And then you go look at the next hotel, and they've all got resort fees. So you don't really have a choice. And it's conservatives have this weird sort of argument like, well, you know, you could start your own hotel and do no resort fees. But, you know, no one can do that for every little thing that they have to do in their life. And it's the same thing with what you see with, like, you know, insurance companies and things like that. You know, they bury things in the details, and then if you don't like it, you go to choose another one. Well, and they've got the same thing buried. They all do. So you don't really, you don't necessarily actually have a choice if all the companies get together and decide they're going to do it. And then somehow they get around it because it's not price fixing, because they're not all charging the exact same thing or agreeing to or something. It's just they're all copying each other or something like that. And the same thing with the, like you mentioned, the ATM fees. I mean, there's a lot of the ATMs, the fees are like $10, you know? So, yeah, you don't necessarily have to pay that.
If you go to Las Vegas, you're basically stuck with the casino ATMs. If you want to, like, go to a regular Bank of America, you need to, like, have access to a car and maybe drive, like, a couple miles off the strip. I mean, it's, like, a regular bank.
Yeah, it's set up so that it isn't in, you know, technically you could, someone could say, oh, well, you know, you should just bring all this cash ahead of time and take it out so you don't need to use the ATM or so forth, but you don't necessarily want to walk around with that much cash for the amount of money that you spend there. And also, it's just a simple mindset of somebody who's like, you know, of these companies that are not looking to provide good value, but just to really nickel and dime you as much as they possibly can get away with. You know, it really takes away from the experience, I feel like.
How long has this been happening? Is it a recent phenomenon, or are you aware of, like, when it really got started with the resort fees?
I think it was really just within the last two or three years, because I did some research, because I had, you know, I had stayed in some of these places like the Flamingo and whatnot before, and I don't remember there being these resort fees. So, of course, I was, like, surprised when I was, you know, reserving my room that I got to the last page and they had added them in there. There was no way to remove them, even though these quote resort fees were for features that no one would have any use for. You know, they were supposed to be for like unlimited local calls, which, you know, who the hell needs that? Everyone has a cell phone. You know, you don't need to use your phone in your hotel room. And then number two, was for like for use of the gym, which, you know, you're going to Vegas for 2 days. Like, do you really need to use the gym? You're going to be walking everywhere, you know? And then the third thing they are for like Wi-Fi in your room, but that should be optional, because I don't know about you, but I don't even want to spend, I don't spend that much time in my hotel room. And if I did, I have Wi-Fi also on my phone already. You know? So it's just really, really, but the fact that you have, they're not even optional. If you want to use those features, it's clearly just a way for them to, you know, add to the price without having to advertise that price. They should be forced to, you know, to show what their essentially their final costs are when they advertise on these different travel sites.
What are your thoughts on the ethics of gambling? There's sort of the libertarian argument that basically you can do it. It's your money, so you should be able to do whatever you want. And then there's an argument put out. It's actually been put out by both social conservatives and some leftists, that gambling is immoral. And that's the social conservative argument, that it's immoral from like a Christian standpoint. Or there's the sort of a leftist argument that gambling is like capitalist exploitation of the working class by the rich. And that's also, Nevada is a state that traditionally has had more libertarian leanings. That's sort of why it's had legalized gambling. What view do you personally take towards gambling?
I'm fine with it. I think that at least where Vegas is concerned, a lot of the people that you know, that actually do blow a lot of money gambling are actually rich people. I mean, you hear it time and time again, the people who you know, like Bill Bennett, some of these others that actually, you know, wealthy millionaires and billionaires that that go there frequently and end up losing tons of money. I don't have any moral problem with gambling. It's I think it's fine. People can do it if they want to, if they enjoy it. I think the only issue I have is that I think that people, if someone recognizes that someone has a problem gambling, to where they're essentially gambling too much and too addicted to it, to where it's causing them harm, I think that you know, people should recognize that and point that out. Even I think you know, they shouldn't have to, but I think even the casinos, you know, if they start to recognize that somebody's really screwing themselves over and really has a serious problem, that they should probably, kind of like when you go to a bar or something, eventually a bartender will be like, no, man, you've had too much. Like, you know, I'm not going to serve you anymore. I think that,
well, in an ideal society is, but if they're trying to make a profit, they don't care if people have gambling addictions. They want people to gamble as much as possible.
Right. That's true. But even at a bar, you know, a guy who's an alcoholic will keep buying more drinks, but the establishment at a certain point may say, like, you know, no, buddy, you've had enough. Like, we can't serve you anymore. That's just too many drinks. And even if the person's not necessarily getting rowdy or anything, I've seen a lot of bartenders that are just like, you know, that's enough. Where I could see that being useful at a casino, but it would be difficult in a place like Las Vegas because, you know, it's so big. That, and there's so many people everywhere, like nobody can really pay attention to what every individual's financial situation is. So I think that's more of a case of where people's, you know, family, if they have to, that they have to deal with that. But I think if you want to live in in any kind of free society, I think that there has to be some expectation of personal responsibility. I don't think that somebody else's inability to control themselves, you know, gambling or drinking or anything like that should mean that that nobody else can do it if most people are just fully capable of having a good time and not going too far.
And the other thing about Las Vegas that sort of epitomizes capitalism at its fullest is it basically has no historic preservation whatsoever, so they're constantly demolishing and rebuilding.
Yeah, it seems like almost the moment something starts to become unprofitable, it gets slated for demolition. I think, you know, sometimes things are still around for a long time because the demolition doesn't necessarily happen too quick. But yeah, eventually they all get torn down and replaced. It doesn't matter how nice the building looks or any of the, you know, historical performers that were there or anything like that. It's just, if it's not making money, it gets demolished and, you know, and they put up some new cheesy thing in its place that's going to start making money.
And one thing about historic preservation is there's always been there's this debate about how old does something have to be to preserve it. I know, like, a lot of Art Deco buildings from the 20s and 30s were torn down in the 50s and 60s, and then by maybe the 80s, people realized they had to preserve them. And then now there's sort of, but stuff from, say, the 50s or 60s is seen as relatively new. So now there's sort of a debate about whether that's old enough to preserve. And Las Vegas is a relatively new city compared to most other major American cities. So that's also a factor. I think people sort of feel that in order to preserve something, doesn't matter how beautiful a building is, it has to be like this old.
Yeah, I think that it's just what happens when there's very little, you know, interest in preservation. So, you know, Las Vegas is basically, you know, it's basically controlled by all the forces that don't give a crap about any of that. So, so they just take it. I guess, you know, what sometimes bothers me is just that, you know, that the people in charge and even the owners of these buildings, you know, they sell them and demolish them and so forth. And like, you know, I think that, you know, Andy Warhol said something like, he had a quote that was like, you know, one of the most beautiful thing is owning land and not ruining it. So I think, you know, someone like owning one of these casinos and actually, like, I would love to see some of these old ones actually like marketed for their historical relevance in all of that. And you see that with, like, you know, Circus was featured in the film Diamonds Are Forever with Sean Connery. And, you know, that's why I always go there. I want to see it. But if you look at the place, like, you know, they don't incorporate that into their marketing, that this is a great historical place. Like, they marketed it.
Well, we were
being,
there, and it's mostly marketed towards there. It's kind of like the very lowest income level of, like, all the hotels, except for maybe
a few
downtown.
Yeah, it's marketed as, like, a... It's marketed as like a Chuck E. Cheese or something like that. It's, they don't even, it's almost, it's kind of sad to me that the, you know, the people who are in charge of some of these old hotels, they don't even realize like what they've got, you know, and what, how they could, you know, they don't even realize the value in any of that. It's just, you know, it's almost like when, we did the show with the guy and the neon signs, you know, like somebody would be like, those are actually really interesting and exciting. But, you know, the guy who's got the building with it, he's like, oh, you know, you're interested in that old thing? Like, who cares? You know?
Well, they, in Las Vegas, they have that, like that museum where they preserve all the old signs and they keep them out. But I think it's great what they're doing, but it's not the same as actually preserving the places themselves.
Yeah, and I mean, I understand if at a certain point they're just, you know, they're too unprofitable to maintain. It's just, it kind of bothers me that they don't even, you know, they don't even market them as being the classically great or something. They completely don't bother with that. They actually try to make them seem reinvented like the new stuff instead of letting them be what they are. Yeah.
Also, the type of people who visit Las Vegas has definitely changed. If you look at old photographs, I even saw one from the Flamingo from like the 50s. People were dressed very well. I mean, they looked, it was considered almost like people who would be considered classy. The people who you see are kind of the type of people who sort of emulate kind of like the trashiest of pop culture.
Yeah, I mean, you definitely don't see people there wearing suits or anything like that. It's all if you walk through there now, it's the people that you see. It's all of the most it's all of the garbage of pop culture. You know, there's no there's almost no class to any of the people who go there at all. And granted, it wasn't necessarily ever this. This really classy place, but I think I remember, you know, Michael Savage talking about it or something that you, when you used to go there, you know, people would be in suits, and all of that. And now when you go, it's just, you know, you see like a 300 pound, lady on her oxygen machine, you know, playing a slot machine.
I mean, even
just,
at the
like
really, even at the really expensive hotels, you even see the same.
Yeah, exactly. Even at the, you know, the Cosmopolitan and the others, you still see, you know, really it just, it's like the kind of people that you would see on any kind of a ghetto dance club on a Friday night, some, nice families and things like that mixed in. There are still, a lot of nice, families that do, show up there.
One other trend I've noticed, observation I've noticed, is that you don't see very hardly any like Swipples or hipsters.
No, definitely. You know, I think the entire time that we were there, I think I mentioned I'd like that. I didn't really even see one interesting person. It was all just the most of douchebag kind of culture, you know, just like bros with tattoos and club skanks and things like that, just random riffraff and thugs, just the most generic.
You would say
people.
Even like Phoenix has more of a Swipple presence than Las Vegas.
Yeah, definitely, especially in you know, downtown Phoenix and a certain maybe certain other parts of Tempe, but I will say that you know Las Vegas does have kind of an arts district I think like 18B or something. We didn't really get in there, but you know, from what
I think
seen
we drove
of,
by there briefly when we were in the cab going to downtown. I mean, I wasn't that impressed by what I saw, but I think maybe it does have potential. There's also, maybe it does have potential in the future to create something. There's also this district downtown called East Fremont where they're kind of trying to start like kind of a hipster area. But that area, I think it has a lot of potential, but it's just getting started.
Yeah, I think that it has some potential, but I still didn't really see it as a as any kind of a Swipple kind of place. The you know, most of what I saw was just a lot of the you know, kind of a more graffiti art, more like kind of diverse, you know, real you know, cultured, vibrant kind of art scene. That's what I saw. It was more more of the of like a harder kind of more of a gritty art scene than a hipster one, really. But you know, didn't investigate it too thoroughly while we were there.
We talked about this in the previous show, how sort of hipster culture got started, but I noticed hipster culture has kind of been watered down. It's kind of like merged with mainstream like pop culture or with like ghetto or kind of douchebag culture. And you see a little bit of that overlap in Vegas.
Yeah, I think, you know, you see a lot of it with you know, hairstyles and, you know, piercings and things like that.
Or like the one, those really big, like, pierced earrings that look like they're trying to copy those, like, tribes in Africa.
Oh, you like the gauged ears?
Oh, yeah, that's what they call it, yeah.
Yeah, that's like, you know, and Grant, I remember when those started getting popular and I was thinking, like, that was around the time when I started thinking that, like, I didn't identify with the new generation of hipsters because they were like, me and my friend used to talk about this, how the old hipsters that that I knew were kind of like, you know, more like artsy and pretentious, you know, whereas the newer generation was more like, oh, it's cool to be white trash, or it's cool to be as like, trashy as possible, kind of like the Sons of Anarchy, you know, kind of aesthetic.
Yeah.
And you started to see it cool to be
isn't
trashy.
Sons
and
of
also
Anarchy,
the,
isn't that take place in Phoenix?
I don't know. I've only seen it a few times at one girl's house, and like I couldn't stand it. But that's kind of the difference is that hipsters used to be into kind of like higher culture stuff, you know, in films and music. But now you can see someone that may look like what you'd think is a hipster, but then they would be, you know, they'd be into like Beyonce and you know, and like Halsey and things like that. So they're still like, when you talk to them, you're just like, oh, I thought this person looked cool, but they, you know, they're not into you know, they're not into 60s music or like Italian film directors or things like that. It's purely they've taken some of the aesthetic, but that's all. It's still it's combined with like a really bad personality. Like right now, you know, there's probably millions of people that look like quasi hipsterish. You know, these bros that work at social media companies and stuff like that. You know, right now they're, you know, they're watching like the NBA finals, you know, some in the sports.
Well, didn't sort of like hipster culture and douchebag culture kind of got started around the same time, maybe like late 90s, early 2000s?
Yeah, I guess I always saw there being like kind of like a big divide. I think a lot of the early kind of douchebag culture is more of like the kind of like Limp Bizkit era, like dudes, white dudes, you know, the
I think
like
that,
rap
that
core
was when,
kind of stuff.
Well, that was like late 90s.
Yeah. And you know, like the hipsters at that period in time were more kind of more like into like you know, Britpop and things like that. You know, so if you, I'm trying to think of some you know, bands like, you know, Pulp and that kind of stuff from that era.
Oh, you're talking about the 80s or the or newer bands that sort of emulated that sound?
Oh, like the I'm talking about like the mid to late 90s and very early 2000s, the stuff that was popular in you know, hipster circles at that time.
And then there's different kind of subsets of the douchebag culture. You have the sort of a white trash version. You have a sort of ghetto version. You have a sort of like Hollywood version with the people who have a lot of money.
Yeah, definitely. I think the probably the version I'm most familiar with is from Living Phoenix is kind of the Scottsdale kind of douchebag culture, which is just some of these jocks that go to work for social media companies and then they go to the clubs Friday nights and try to get laid, but they all kind of bro vibe where they, you know, they talk about like man buns and things like that, but they like, they work out and they all have like a tattoo or something, and go to these pool parties or whatever, just kind of, really, that's the you know, douchebag culture I'm probably most familiar with. That
Phoenix and Vegas, to a degree as well, are kind of culturally extensions of Southern California because large numbers of people who got priced out of Southern California moved there.
Yeah, I think so. And a lot of the people in Phoenix and Vegas are also from areas like in the Midwest where their people moved out there for jobs as the factory jobs started dwindling in the 80s and 90s. They started to a lot more of them started to come out there for work, and Texas is another, like Dallas is the same way for some of these new industries that cropped up to replace the old ones. And the same with the people who left California. You see a lot of these, you know, Orange County and, you know, Phoenix and Las Vegas and Dallas are all very, very similar in that they've attracted a lot of those demographics, I think, due to economic realities. And also changes in the political climate in some of those other states, like California.
Well, that's true. Arizona and Nevada both used to be really conservative states, and now they're kind of shifting into, like, blue states, like California.
Yeah, that's true. And, well, people still think of Arizona as a very conservative state, but in my experience, the actual city of Phoenix is very liberal. We had an extremely liberal Mayor Phil Gordon, you know, who made the place into kind of a sanctuary city for illegal aliens. And, you know, the city itself is very diverse in many parts. And it doesn't feel it's a very kind of a liberal city in many ways. And it's becoming more liberal. You know, there's more public transportation, things like that. In some ways, like, it's been a big improvement, but with the diversity and whatnot, it's been not so great.
In Las Vegas, even though you don't have the much of a SWPO element, I think it's become more Democrat because of the diversity. But I know their last mayor, Oscar Goodman, he was a Democrat, but he was considered to be like a very pro-business.
Yeah, that seems to be what it's becoming a mix of more of the, I guess, you know, neoliberal, which is kind of the really pro open borders, but also you know, low taxes and attracting business. And it's kind of, I don't know. It's almost like the worst of all worlds for me, but
Hillary Clinton won the Nevada Democratic primary. I don't think Bernie did that great there.
No, definitely, definitely not. But I think that, I don't know why that is, but it could be, I'm not familiar enough with the politics of Nevada. I know that there is a really heavy, Mormon presence in Nevada. But in Arizona,
maybe not Las Vegas, but maybe the northern or eastern parts of the state.
Yeah, which is similar to Phoenix in the sense that people think of Arizona as conservative, but to get to the conservative parts of Phoenix are actually like the suburbs, you know, Mesa and, you know, Apache Junction and then Scottsdale. But Scottsdale is not conservative really in the kind of a any kind of alt-right way. It's more of the neoliberal, you know, anything
course,
to
like
anything
Orange
to
County.
Make money. Exactly.
So you're talking about all these criticisms of Vegas, but despite that, you were telling me that you would consider it is probably one of your favorite American cities.
It is because I think that when I go there, I'm able to, I'm still able to experience it while tuning out a lot of the stuff that I don't like. And there's something that's I still find to be very almost magical about it. It's almost like a kind of a fantasy land in a way. And some of that is changing for the worse. But one thing I always really loved about it was all of these different themed casinos, you know, which had all these different, you know, like Caesar's Palace and Treasure Island and the Mirage and so forth, Circus, where it was almost like you could enter into all these kind of escapist kind of ambiances. It's almost like I don't know if what they call it the you know, I don't know if it's like the black pill or what, but just the ultimate kind of escapist paradise,
yeah.
You know, the in a way. So it's like you're really just going into another world. And there's something I love about it where you just feel like really alive while you're there.
Also, yeah, you do. It does have this otherworldly feel to it. It's a combination of like the fantasy aspect, the lighting, the weather, the geographic location. Also, I miss at night, you have this really kind of nice, dry, windy weather. Like right now, even though the temperature is lower, it's been like really kind of humid and sticky. And you were telling me Phoenix has been having some nasty weather.
Yeah, it's just super hot here. And it is there too, but I think that at night it seems to cool off and get a nice, the last few times I've been there, at least there has been a lot of a nice, nice kind of wind there that you get at night. And just walking around at night, just the energy and so many people there are just so, so happy, you know, and it just really is like a really good place to be. You don't really encounter a lot of people that are surly or in shitty mood, you know, except for the staff or like the less fortunate people that are out laying about, you know, kind of trying to hustle you or whatever, like, you know, some of those obnoxious people that are constantly trying to
the ones
give you cards.
Giving out the cards for like escorts.
Yeah, well, most of those ones don't even like speak English, but I mean that, you know, the people like trying to hawk their CDs and stuff that are just kind of those, I find them to be kind of obnoxious, but still overall, like you have to admit that, that just the energy when you go there and just the excitement of all of the different, people that you see, is just, I don't know. I find it to be, just a really kind of, a great place that I always am a little bit, sad when I leave.
And there's sort of these three different there's in Las Vegas casinos, there's the original Old Las Vegas, which pretty much the remnants of that is in downtown Fremont Street. There's Circus Circus, and then there's the one, the Riviera, which just got demolished. Then there was this sort of the themed hotels that became popular in the 90s. And then there's the newer ones like Cosmopolitan, which they're not really themed, but they're pretty much similar to like upscale hotels you'd find in like LA or Miami.
Yeah, that's one thing I noticed that I don't really like as much is that they're these new casinos that are coming up. They don't really have specific themes anymore. They're just building these upscale hotels that are kind of like these clubs and almost have just very collegey kind of names. Like they're just, it's becoming like a party town with like it's embracing all of the the shitty DJ culture kind of stuff. That's why you have all of these kind of newer places that have like a very club atmosphere. And I think that's important to bring up is that when you have something that is so hyper-capitalist that it's always a reflection of society at its current time. For whatever the market forces are at the time, it constantly adapts to those. So I think that's why you see it had a certain look to it in the 70s and then the 80s and so forth. And then one of the reasons why some of these new places are so much shittier in my mind is probably because it's an actual reflection of our culture, which is, you know, which I think is pretty shitty right now. So,
and the thing is, there's sort of like social conservatives and even people in the alt-right, they complain about hedonism as being in degeneracy from a kind of more of a puritanical perspective. You're not like morally opposed to degeneracy, but you're more just opposed to people who just kind of, they lack any culture or just sort of blind hedonism where there's that's basically just all they care about.
Well, I dislike it when there's like a blatant disregard for science to where you're just kind of like, you know, making up all of these new gender identities and so forth. And it's just kind of, for someone who's rational, it becomes kind of insane, but I don't have a problem with it. I actually prefer, you know, the ancient like Rome before the era before Christianity, you know? So I think that in some ways Vegas is always representative of that in some areas, but I don't have a problem with degeneracy or sleaziness or any of that stuff. That's not, I'm not socially conservative, at all. I don't really care.
It's more like just the lack of concern, just more coming at it from a perspective of cultural elitism versus a cultural trash.
Exactly.
So I want to get into kind of the aesthetics of the different casinos we visited. Let's kind of start with the original stuff, downtown Las Vegas. And when we visited, it really did make me think of our interview we did with Thomas Rinaldi of the New York Neon blog. And I went crazy taking a lot of pictures that night we were up.
Yeah, in downtown. And that is one area where there has been some, I think, some good preservation, because that Fremont Street didn't used to be blocked off the way it is in old TV shows and whatnot from what I can remember, like
the
TV show Vegas.
I think it looked, I know that the Fremont Street experience did play a role in revitalizing it, but I think it's kind of tacky. I preferred how it looked in before that in some of the older pictures I've seen.
I would say that I like the look of it now. I don't like the what it's become. you know, I think like we, you know, we, 5 seconds after we walked in, it was just nothing but like,
well, the people,
you know,
go there,
thug music,
yeah, they go there
like,
because,
so yeah,
people go there because it's cheap. That's the only reason they go there.
Yeah. And it just, if remember just like when we walked in, it was just instantly just, the vibe was just so ghetto, you know, you had like ghetto music blaring from everywhere and just, all of these stages set up with, you know, it was just kind of, so I would say that the actual look of it, as far as, you know, what they've done with the overhead and some of that stuff, I think that they've done some good stuff to it, but I think that the, you know, the culturally though, it's, you know, it could use some, ovens or something, you know. That's all I can say.
I understand Thomas Rinaldi's passion, because those older signs, there's just something about them. They have this magical glow to them. The newer, like, fluorescent signage you see in the strip, it just has a very kind of a very, like, sterileness to it.
Yeah, it's missing, I don't know, some of that, like, old the Vegas, like Americana or something like that. You see some of those older signs, like what those, you know, those cowboy ones and whatnot. They have a certain, they have a certain personality to them that the newer stuff doesn't have. And, you know, again, that goes back to some of the capitalism and the more organic. But we talked about in the one episode how, even when you look at old advertisements, you know, of course those were part of capitalism, but it was like, they still would, were, you know, the ads even had a kind of personality to them. And it was like, almost like eventually though, they started figuring out that, oh, we don't, you know, we can do these ads cheaper. We don't even need any personality to them. We can just, you know, so it kind of reminds me of that.
One thing that's interesting, I was reading a Thomas Rinaldi's blog. He was talking about these bulb lights, and they were very popular in the 1920s, and they became widespread in popularity before the neon signs did. But I noticed that a lot of the hotels that were built in the 90s, like the Venetian, Palazzo, Treasure Island, used those bulb signs. And they end up, like, from a distance, they have a kind of sparkling, like, gold look to them.
Yeah, I think some of the casinos downtown have, I think you still see some of those bulb signs too, right? On Fremont Street.
Yeah, definitely, but also both the older and some of the newer stuff, like from the 90s.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, how they get away with that, or, you know, in the future, how prevalent that's going to be. It seems like it wastes a lot of electricity. You know, those bulb lights, but I guess that's the benefit when you're in a place where nobody cares, you know, so.
And I know we are kind of going back to the whole sort of theme. There's this whole, I think we walked by that construction site near Circus. They're building this big Chinese theme resort, and it looks interesting, but it is kind of going back to the sort of theme resorts of the 90s.
Yeah, and I think that's a good development. It looks pretty cool. I kind of wish that it wasn't you know, a Chinese theme, just because we have, like, you know, the USA is already, like, so becoming so influenced by China. Everything's made in China and so forth. And, you know, so now they're going to have a Chinese themed casino where it's like, you know, the Chinese are already dominating. Like, do we really need to, you know, do we really need to go into a casino has the ambiance of, you know, of old China or something like that? I think that, you know, I'm a very creative person, so I have, you know, would have all kinds of ideas for themed casinos and so forth. But
I was actually,
you know,
thinking of an idea. I know I got the idea because you do those paintings inspired by Mondrian, and I saw you were doing those videos of the image of that looked kind of like Mondrian. I think it was the Bellagio, but I forget. But I think a great thing for Casino would be in the style of like a Mondrian painting, but where it's all lit up and like it's constantly moving, like those like bars.
Well, it's funny that you say that because in Scottsdale there actually was a hotel called the Mondrian, which actually had that kind of theme.
There is a Hotel Mondrian in LA, West Hollywood, on the Sunset Strip, but it's a lot more simple.
Yeah, I think the one in Scottsdale was too. It was only, vaguely, only vaguely themed. But I think that, I don't know. Like I said, I'm very creative. I think that, you know, there's so many cool ideas you could have for like a themed casino. You know, you could have like a vampire themed casino or something. You could have like a Soviet Union themed casino. I mean, there's so much cool
or
shit you could do.
Even one,
you know,
kind of like based like on that Italian futurist city that I forget the name, but you know what I'm talking about.
So like Metropolis or one of those kind of
something like
the
old Metropolis.
Yeah, or you know, you could have like a 1950s themed casino or something like that, where everything is just a like a 50s. You could have I don't know. There's so many different kinds of things that you could do to have a themed a themed casino. You could have like a moon themed casino. That's like you're on the moon or on Mars.
I know there was a proposal for a Titanic themed casino, but that didn't go through.
Yeah, that would have been cool, right? I think. Yeah.
Even if you look at something like New York, New York, I think New York, New York is kind of cheesy, but if you take that theme, there's so much potential. I mean, they could have done something where the front has kind of a like vintage Times Square look to it. The interior would be like a replica of a Grand Central Station, and then all these like kind of Art Deco style skyscrapers like you see in New York. I think they could have done something really great, but I think as it is now, it's okay, but I think it just doesn't reach that potential.
Yeah, I think that one, that's okay. I think it's okay. I think you're right. They could have done a lot more with it, but, but I still enjoy the experience of going in there. I think it still has a pretty good vibe. Same with like with Excalibur, they could have done a lot more with the medieval theme, but it's okay. I think it's okay. Some of it might actually be more prevalent if you actually stay in some of these places, like maybe other aspects of the hotel have more of that vibe. You know, if you stay in Excalibur in one of those tower rooms or something, maybe it seems more medieval or something like that. But I think they could do a lot more with these themes to make them more interesting. They should. You know, it'll be interesting when the new Chinese imperial themed casino shows up, how much cool stuff is there.
And even something like the Wynn, even though it's newer, I was pretty impressed by the inside. I like how they went with that kind of a fantasy land theme. I mean, some people might kind of, you were saying Candyland. I was kind of thinking of Alice in Wonderland, but
yeah.
I know I looked up Wikipedia.
Wikipedia
describes the theme of the interior of the Wynn as art imitating life.
Hmm. Yeah, well, I don't know about all that. I think it reminds me a lot of the board game Candyland when you walk in there. That's what it reminded me of, just the aesthetic of it. But I, too, was impressed by the interior because –
Well, I was kind of expecting it just to be just another bland kind of new casino, but I was actually, like, pleasantly surprised.
Yeah, exactly, because the exterior of it, like, you know, as many times as I've been to Vegas, like, I never even was interested enough to go in there, and because the outside of the building just looks so like, I don't know. It looks so like just generic 90s, you know, even with like the, you know, his cursive name written at the top. It was just like, you look at it and you're like, gee, like, you know, the interior of that couldn't be interesting at all, but it totally is.
And even stuff, I mean, oh, even stuff like the Paris, Paris is pretty cool, or the Paris.
Yeah, I'd say so. I think that, I mean, you could tell it's a very, you know, contemporary casino, but it still has a really cool vibe. It does have kind of a, you know, however slight and cheesy, like it does have its own, you know, kind of identity to it. That's somewhat.
I mean, I think all of them have something interesting about them. The only one that I don't really have anything positive to say about, something like Planet Hollywood. If I had to pick my least favorite, it would probably be Planet Hollywood.
Yeah, I agree. That one, I think Planet Hollywood sucks. And then also Harrah's is another one that I don't find anything there that's particularly interesting. But yeah, definitely, I think Planet Hollywood is one of the worst because it seems to attract the shittiest class of, you know, clientele. And then it also, I don't know, just the whole vibe in there is totally whack, and it isn't, you know, it doesn't really feel like Vegas really, or anything.
It just feels kind of like,
there's nothing
a mall,
interesting about it. Yeah, it just isn't interesting at all. It reminds me of just like going to Hard Rock Cafe or something. It's just nothing.
One thing I did take the monorail, and I've always been fascinated with monorails since I was a kid taking them to Disneyland, and they're very fast. They're very kind of futuristic. I think most cities, at least Sunbelt cities, should have a monorail system, but the way it's set up is, it's put way behind the casinos, so you have to walk through all these gambling areas. They do it intentionally because they want people to buy stuff and to gamble, but it's very inconvenient. I mean, ideally, there should be a monorail like right down the strip.
Yeah, I completely agree. I love monorails for, you know, for the same reason, since taking them at Disneyland in the 1980s as a kid, I became obsessed with them. I think that every city sort of should have them. I actually, Phoenix has a light rail system, and I mean, it would be so much better if it was an actual a monorail. The experience would be better. But, you know, with all of these things, as great as they are, they're often just ruined by the people. You know, even riding on the light rail in Phoenix would, you know, it's ruined by the people, you know, all of like the loud and obnoxious, like ghetto people that are always on these things, you know, completely ruins any kind of, you know, I guess romantic, futuristic experience. But Vegas might be a little bit better because they, the trams and monorails and stuff, they're kind of, they're more tourist oriented. So it's not necessarily filled with as much riffraff, you know, riding.
Also noticed that the airport terminals at McCarran had a sort of a mid-century, a space age aesthetic.
They did. And they have that nice trams there too, which, you know, which I get however little a thrill out of riding one of those things, even at the airport. Yeah.
There's sort of this discussion about a density in cities. One benefit of staying at like a hotel in Las Vegas, it shows how people could live. If you live in such a compact environment, you have like a swimming pool, a gym, all your restaurants within like a short like walk or elevator ride.
Yeah, and I think that is that's awesome. You know, where I'd love to live in one building where you could essentially do all the stuff. Because theoretically, you know, if you have the money or so, you could pretty much live in that hotel. You know, you could eat dinner down below and you could do your shopping there. You can, I mean, they have salons there. You can get your hair cut there. You can do, you could really do everything there if you wanted to. But but I guess, you know, conservatives would make the argument that that because of if someone had a family of five kids, it wouldn't necessarily be all that convenient. They think of us as, like, you know, these single dudes, it would be easy for us.
One of my guests actually said he lived in Korea, and there was this – he lived in, like, this new development of, like, a bunch – it was brand new, of, like, 40-story high-rises. And basically it was like that. Like, everything – was within, like, even schools, gyms, restaurants, the supermarket, everything was in, like, a short walk.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, that's super cool. I tend to, you know, prefer dense city living rather than, you know, I'm not really a country person. I think, like,
I guess your idea of nature would be, like, the tropical gardens of the Mirage.
Yeah, or like the indoor skydiving, indoor skydiving place. I'd be tropical, you know, going to the Tropicana or the, you know, the indoor part of the Mirage or something like that. I mean,
I guess because this kind of conservative argument that every single person has to have a single family home, and they blame, there's this blogger named Joel Kotkin. He's not really a conservative. I'd say he's more kind of a centrist, but his argument is that in order to have a functioning middle class, everyone needs to have a single family home, and that the push for densification is what's driving out like middle-class families out of cities. I don't necessarily agree with that argument. I think it's two factors. One factor is that the busing out of the urban schools, and that pushed out middle-class families. But the other factor is that mass immigration is driving up housing prices in major cities. But at the same time, you have these people who want, this is especially true in LA and the Bay Area, they want to own, preserve their single family home, and they're strongly opposed to any increase in density. So you have this increase in demand through population growth. At the same time, there's limits on build, like being able to build, like you can't build a high rise over a strip mall.
Yeah, no, I agree. And they're, you know, they're moving out there for deals, partially because they're less interested in the aesthetic of city living. That's why they're like, oh, I can move out here and get a 5-bedroom house for, you know, $20,000. Whereas, like, people who want to live in the cities, like, they want to live a certain kind of city lifestyle. You know, so they're willing to live in a studio or one bedroom apartment, and pay more, because if you like a 4-bedroom house out somewhere is like, it's not a good trade off for them to live out in the middle of nowhere in the land of strip malls, and all of that. Well, I think that also what happens is that you have, it's what happens when you allow these wealthy foreigners to come in and buy up these properties and then jack up the price. It's the same thing for these universities. You know, tuition keeps getting raised because they're bringing in all of these wealthy foreign students and whatnot that are willing to pay these tuitions, and it's increasing the demand and the price for everyone else. So it's a kind of a supply and demand thing. And there's also, like you said, the mass immigration, you know, if you're going to be importing, you know, millions of these people into the city to do these low wage jobs and whatnot, that they're, you know, they're going to drive up the prices, especially because a lot of them are willing to live in very dire conditions. You know, they'll live like some of these people from foreign countries will live in some small apartment in New York, you know, and there'll be five of them squeezed into, or, you know, 10 of them squeezed into some tiny place, and they're willing to live like that.
We are out of time. Before I wrap up the show, is there anything else you'd like to add about Vegas?
Well, just the that experience I had with security was pretty funny, I guess.
You told me about that.
Yeah, actually, it was like relatively late at night, and I left my room to I was kind of hungry, so I went down to the lobby to get like a slice of pizza or something. So I got you know, pizza and a water from this place, and then I decided that I wanted to buy like a soda or something, like a Diet Coke. And then I went so after I ate the pizza, I went into this gift shop, and they didn't have the drink that I wanted. Like, they only had like Pepsi products. So I just like walked out right away. And like a couple minutes later, I got surrounded by security, and they had actually accused me of stealing this water bottle, which I had when I went in there, because I had got it at the pizza place. So I had them basically interrogating, like, they took my ID, and they like, you know, were making all these phone calls. And I mean, there was like,
how long did the whole thing
take? It took maybe like 15 minutes or so. And they even had like the general manager of the hotel. And she was like, you know, look, that cashier says she saw you take the water bottle out of there. You know, you're going to have to pay for this. You know, like, where are you staying and all this stuff. I'm like, I'm staying here. I'm like, I didn't take the water bottle. And I kept telling them to, you know, to check the cameras because everything is recorded. But so these ladies, they were complete assholes, like all of these people, the security and whatnot. And there was like a white guy and or some kind of like, you know, mystery meat, like Mexican or Filipino or something like that. And then there was like the black security lady, and then this other lady who was the general manager. And so after all of them, like, you know, kind of taunting me and like, you know, trying to get me it's the stupid water bottle, you know, which I paid for. I even showed them like my bank statement online and my account that showed that I had paid for it. And so finally this lady comes up to me, and she's like, the security lady, she's like, oh, you know, I apologize. Like, it turns out that the cashier didn't see what she said that she saw. And I was like, oh, you checked the cameras, didn't you? And she's like, yeah, we checked the cameras, and they showed that you didn't take anything. So they all apologized. Their tone completely changed. And I was like, not an asshole to them. I was like, you know, I understand you're just doing your job, and somebody told you I took something, so, you know, you took action or whatever. And I think they actually like ended up comping my room for my entire stay there, just because of that incident.
Oh, your entire stay was free.
Yeah, except for those stupid resort fees. They did charge me those. That's all they could charge me.
Yeah, the
so
fees.
On that note, I guess.
So, Rabbit, it's been a great show. Thanks for being on.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
That's all we have for today's show, so take care, and we'll be back with you next time.